This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Label Sternbach and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us now on New Beginnings is Dr. Michael Osterholm. We really enjoy when he stops by to visit with us. And he says the monovalent vaccine is really important in preventing severe disease and death from COVID-19. Doctor, what else are you seeing?
We need to keep a close eye on this so that we can make the best possible recommendations regarding the timing of future doses, and so that we do not overpromise the effectiveness of the vaccine to the public. Our COVID vaccines, including the monovalent XBB vaccine, which is the one currently available, are really important tools for preventing severe disease and death due to COVID-19. But we need to be clear about the limitations of these tools, which include the durability of their protection by age. We also still have extremely low vaccine uptake here in the United States, with only 18.5% of U.S. adults having received the most recent vaccine. But that needle is moving very slowly in terms of increased vaccinations. So to summarize what's happening in the United States, it's clear we are seeing tremendous activity. But as we look at the international data, one trend is very important. The number of hospitalizations and deaths compared to the total number of cases is much, much lower now than it was in the early days of the pandemic. So I think this is an important context to say that this disease has now become a much more common everyday infection here in the United States. But fortunately, we're not seeing the same level of severity that we saw in the previous days of the pandemic. Still doesn't erase the number of deaths that are occurring every day with this disease. It still doesn't erase the 25,000 people who are hospitalized with this infection right now. I don't want to minimize those for a minute, because some of them are you, some of them are your loved ones, some of them are your friends and colleagues, and they're my loved ones, friends, and colleagues. But at the same time, thank God we're not seeing these much higher levels of severe illness and hospitalizations that we've seen before. Now, if we take a look at the international picture, it is not a great one in terms of what we have for data from those countries doing what I would consider to be more comprehensive surveillance. Let's take Canada, for example. They reported 4,687 hospitalized patients, 160 were in ICUs. If you look at the seven-day moving average of deaths, it's about 73. This is the highest it's been since May of 2022. And at this point, they have now seen a preponderance of JN1 variant as the causative infection variant. Given the number of deaths that they're seeing, and it's going back to those early 2022 days, this is a pretty significant issue. The challenge will be what's happening with vaccination, which has been limited in terms of Canada's uptake of the new additional dose, and what does it mean with regard to which variant is circulating. Let's take another country like Denmark, where there the wastewater data in Denmark is the highest it's been since Omicron, which is remarkable. Hospitalizations in Denmark right now are the same as they were in October of 2022, with about 118 new admissions per day. Now, to give you some context, 118 may not sound like a lot, but remember, it's a much smaller population in Denmark. When the Alpha variant emerged in 2020, they got as high as 174 hospitalizations a day. So now they're at 118. During Omicron, which was by far the worst hit they suffered in Denmark, they're at 403 hospitalized patients a day. So we're still a little bit more than one-fourth of the number of hospitalizations as Omicron, but that is still a very significant burden for at a time when most people thought that COVID was done and over with. The other issue in Denmark, which is something we need to look at carefully around the world, right now in those children 2 years of age and younger, we are seeing the highest hospitalization rate for COVID since 2020. Think of that. The highest number of hospitalizations for those two and younger right now in Denmark than any time in the pandemic. This is a wake-up call to, again, prioritize not just those 65 years of age and older to get vaccine, those in long-term care facilities, but also our kids, particularly young children. Just as we keep focusing on RSV and influenza with our young kids, we should be focusing very clearly on COVID. And for those naysayers in my public health world who say, oh, kids don't need to be vaccinated, I think the data in Denmark should give you pause. It really is concerning. If we look at what's happened in Italy right now, there's about 7,640 hospitalizations right now. This is the highest level they've had since January 2023. And while it is much lower than the 38,000 hospitalizations seen in their worst moments in 2020, it's still basically a sizable increase in hospitalizations occurring there now. If we look at the Netherlands right now, wastewater levels are at all-time high in the entire pandemic. We are seeing about 810 persons hospitalized in the Netherlands per day. This is the highest it's been in all of 2023. The JN1 variant is predominating. And let me just conclude with one last country. I could spend hours going through country by country. But this is one I think that is a wake-up call, again, to those who continue to push this concept that COVID has become a seasonal virus. That is simply not true. And I know many of my colleagues want to believe that because it then makes it possible to come up with a plan for concurrently giving both influenza vaccines and COVID vaccines in the fall. If we look at New Zealand, a country near and dear to my heart, we're seeing some remarkable impacts of COVID right now, even though it's in the middle of their summer. During Omicron, the highest level of hospitalizations was about 3.2 hospitalizations per 100,000 people. Last August, that had gotten down to about 0.3 per 100,000 people were hospitalized. Well, it's climbing. It's now back up to 1.3 hospitalizations, and that's the highest it's been since 2022. And all the data right now looks like that's going to continue to climb, at least for the next few weeks, meaning that it surely could get at least to be half, if not more, of the very highest number of hospitalizations ever seen during Omicron. Now, anybody who would tell you that this is a seasonal virus will have to explain how in the height of the New Zealand summer could we be seeing such activity if this was a seasonal virus? So the bottom line message for all of this is, one, we still have a lot of activity in the United States. Fortunately, with a fewer number of severe illnesses per number of people infected. Number two, I don't know where it's going. I don't know. Why is this happening? Is it because of waning immunity? Is it because the new variant actually is causing more infections to occur, breaking through the immunity that we have? We don't know. All I can tell you is we're not done with it yet. And for many of us who are trying to live our lives as safe as possible, but at the same time, not just shutting ourselves in, we got some real questions about what to do. But I can say right now, globally, COVID is still here. It's still challenging us. And I wish we had better answers.
Well, that answer seems pretty good to us. That's Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's an epidemiologist. And you're listening to New Beginnings.
You're listening to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and it happened this week in 1896. The first X-ray was taken by H.L. Smith. It was a picture of a hand with a bullet in it. In 1921, Kennesaw Mountain Landis became the first commissioner of baseball. In 1932, Hattie W. Carraway became the first woman elected to the United States Senate. In 1948, the Supreme Court ruled that states could not discriminate against law school applicants because of race. In 1959, Berry Gordy founded Tamla Records, the future Motown Records. It was the first record label owned by an African American to feature primarily African American artists. In 1966, Batman debuted on ABC television.
Atomic batteries to power, turbines to speed.
Roger, ready to move out.
Adam West and Burt Ward portrayed the Cape Crusaders' Batman and Robin. In 1969, Joe Namath and the AFL's New York Jets defeated the NFL's Baltimore Colts 16-7 in Super Bowl III. It is regarded as one of the most shocking upsets in professional football history. In 1971, All in the Family debuted on CBS television.
From Television City in Hollywood.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made. Those were the days.
And you knew when you were there.
Dance for girls and men, women. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again. Didn't need no welfare state.
Everybody pulled his weight.
G-R-O-S, now red, great. Those were the days.
In 76, mystery writer Agatha Christie died at the age of 85. Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile were among her most popular works. In 1981, the primetime soap opera Dynasty premiered on ABC. In 1991, Congress voted to give President George Bush the authority to use armed forces to move Iraqi soldiers out of Kuwait. And in 2017, former President Barack Obama presented former Vice President Joe Biden with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It happened this week, and you're listening to New Beginnings.
Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151. 888-711-1151 or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and joining me now is Minnesota AARP State Director Kathy McClear. And Kathy, it's always good to be with you. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Freddie.
It's a pleasure. And it's Community Challenge Grants time. And what can you tell us about it? Is it are we approaching the deadline date for AARP to accept the applications?
Yeah, so it's this is the eighth year of the AARP Community Challenge Grants. And over time, AARP has invested more than $16 million through these quick action grants, including 34 communities in Minnesota and another, 1,300 across the country. The grant process is just opening now, and you have until March 6th to submit those applications.
What type of projects are you seeing come through for people who want to accept and take on the opportunity to do something wonderful for their communities?
Yeah, well, we've talked many times, Freddie, about AARP's real commitment to making and helping build strong communities for people of all ages. We know, we like to say, what's good for someone who's 80 is good for someone who's 8. But we know that those great communities take time to build. And yet, we also know that sometimes quick actions can spark some of that long-term change. And so these grants are really focused on tangible installations, community engagement opportunities, quick action timelines that help those grantees fast track some of those great ideas that they've had to make improvements in their community and to replicate some of those very promising practices that we've seen in other locations.
I was looking through, and I don't know if these are the actual working titles of these grants, but I saw something that said flagship, another that said capacity building micro grants, and another that says demonstration. Can you walk us through these?
Sure. Those are just some fancy names for some of the categories that we put these in. But when we're talking about the flagship grants, it's really on improving those public places, things like transportation, housing, digital connections, building community resilience, or community health and economic empowerment. And then when we talk about capacity building micro grants, these are things that are very small dollar, but they have a big impact in the community. So things like walk audits, we now have a bike audit tool. And so if someone is interested in making sure that their community is bikeable, we have a tool to help folks do that. And you can apply for some dollars to get some folks in your community who are like-minded to execute that bike audit and make it happen in your community. Also, things like home fit modifications. So as people choose to age in place, they want to do it in their own homes and their communities. But sometimes that means modifying a home to make it appropriate for you as you age or as a loved one ages. And so funding some of those programs that help allow folks in your community to stay in the community and in their own home as they age. And then the demonstration grants. Mm-hmm. These are some projects that replicate local efforts that we've seen elsewhere. So things like digital connectivity to things to prepare and respond to disasters, equitable engagement to reconnect communities, and then housing choice design competitions. We talk about those as accessory dwelling units. Some people call them granny flats. We prefer to call them accessory dwelling units, but finding those opportunities to make sure that you have appropriate and accessible housing as you age. So that's kind of the quick synopsis of those fancy name categories.
So who's eligible for these grants?
Yeah, so these grants are open to all 501c3 nonprofits, 501c4s, and 501c6 nonprofits or government entities. And we will consider some other types of organizations on a case-by-case basis. But if you're a nonprofit and these kind of activations are up your alley, we want you to apply. And you can do that at aarp.org/community-challenge.
Will there be any information sessions prior coming up soon, or have those already taken place?
There's all kinds of information on the website, and folks can certainly contact AARP Minnesota, and we'll give you all the information you need to get started.
All right. The Community Challenge Grants, the door is open for you. And again, if you'd like more information about that, just visit AARP.org/community-challenge and do that by March 6th. I'm Freddie Bell, and this is New Beginnings. All right, it's time to turn your radios up way past 10 because it's time for my Song of the Week. It was in 2011 when Sheik's Nile Rodgers revealed in his website blog that he was battling cancer. He said he'd been diagnosed 2.5 months earlier and that he'd already had surgery in the efforts to beat the disease. His band called Sheik was originally formed back in 1972 and now has been renamed Nile Rodgers and Sheik. It was guitarist Nile Rodgers and bassist Bernard Edwards. It recorded many commercially successful disco songs, including Dance, 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 Yowza, 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 Everybody Dance in 1977, Le Freak in 1978, I Want Your Love, Good Times, and My Forbidden Lover. The group regarded themselves as a rock band for the disco movement that made good on hippie, peace, love, and freedom. In 2017, Sheik was nominated for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the 11th time. And now here's one of their biggest hits from 1978. It's Le Freak, starring Nile Rodgers and Sheik.
That's La Freak from 1978, my song of the week, featuring Chic and Nile Rodgers. I'm Freddie Bell. For more information, you can follow me on freddiebell.com. Thank you for finding New Beginnings, and I hope you stay with us, and we'll make it worth your while. News now from the lighter side of my desk. There's a new bill in the House of Representatives that would allow commercial pilots to make reports about UFO sightings to the federal government. The bipartisan bill introduced comes after testimony from military officials about unidentified objects outmaneuvering jets. The legislation would also allow air traffic controllers to make reports. Democratic Representative Robert Garcia of California, a co-sponsor of the bill, says it's important for national security. eBay is going to pay $3 million to settle criminal charges after employees stalked a Boston couple who published material critical of the online retailer. Ina and David Steiner were targeted starting in 2019 by employees for their criticisms, mailing them things like a fetal pig, a bloody pig mask, live insects, and a funeral wreath. The company was charged with stalking through interstate travel, stalking through electronic communications, witness tampering, and obstruction of justice. That resulted in felony convictions for 7 people, including 57 months in federal prison for the ringleader. The city of Downey, California is fining a restaurant more than $4,000, claiming its servers are wearing uniforms that are too revealing. A spokesperson for Ojos Locos says the restaurant will file an appeal and hopes to be reimbursed for the fine. Waitresses wear T-shirts that are cut into tank tops and short skirts. The city says that's a violation of its dress code for people who are handling food. And here's yet another reminder to lock those car doors. Colorado Springs police say vehicle theft soared 32% last year when compared to 2022. The department saw a record high number in November, blaming a social media trend where teenagers use a particular hack to steal Kia and Hyundai cars. Police say while they're working hard to stop this, they need drivers and owners to do their part as well. It's wacky, but it's true. A man in the UK was caught in a video speed trap and later received in the mail a ticket for $140 and a photo of his car. Instead of payment, he sent the police department a photograph of $140. Several days later, the man received a letter from the police that contained another picture of handcuffs. It was 25 years ago that Napster, the revolutionary music file service, debuted in 1999. The service was created by student Sean Fanning, and it quickly gained popularity, making it easy for music enthusiasts to download copies of songs that were otherwise difficult to obtain. At the height of its popularity, about 80 million users were registered on its network. However, Napster's operation was riddled with controversy. The service faced numerous legal battles over digital rights, with litigation coming from various angles, including the Recording Industry Association of America, Metallica, and Dr. Dre. In 2001, the original Napster was shut down after a successful court injunction. Today, Napster is a paid music streaming service. And if you're feeling a little dull, a sharp knife and an apple just might be the trick. While most everybody knows an apple a day keeps the doctor away, Japanese scientists found that peeling one might be good for you too. Scientists at Japan's National Food Research Institute show that peeling an apple stimulates the most highly evolved section of the brain. They found blood flow increased when test subjects actually peeled an apple, but did not when they only rubbed the apple with the knife. That led to the conclusion that a complex task involving the use of a potentially dangerous tool was activating the frontal lobes. On the lighter side of my desk this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature and is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Joining me now is Label Sternbach. He is the expert. He is the man when it comes to helping to manage your finances through retirement and beyond. And I'm wondering, Label, first of all, welcome back. Can you refresh our memory? It's been a long time since the Tax Cut and Job Act was passed. And I'm wondering, what can you remind us about it? What's most important?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, and let's wind back the clock, right? Take a trip down memory lane. The old tax code prior to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act was, you know, it had a very low thresholds for the different tax brackets. There was no standard deduction, so everybody was paying taxes That's number one. Number two is Congress had to pass a law every time they wanted to increase the tax bracket. It wasn't something that happened automatically. So while there was a lot of inflation, the tax brackets didn't increase automatically. So what ended up happening, and the reason why the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act got passed, was because there was a whole bunch of people who really should have been, they really shouldn't have been paying much in taxes at all, maybe a few thousand dollars, but all of a sudden they found themselves in tax brackets as if they were high-end, you know, white-collar workers making $150,000, $200,000 a year. And the, you know, Congress recognized that that wasn't really conducive to stimulating the economy, right? We're in a post-2007 world. We're trying to stimulate the economy. We're trying to bring things back on track. And, you know, and while this was in 2018, you know, that's the, you know, that was the nature of it, was to try to stimulate the economy. And so one of the things they did was, in instead of just increasing the tax brackets, they decided to overhaul it. And they made a few important changes that were really beneficial to a lot of people. Number one was they added inflation adjustments automatically to the tax brackets. So the IRS didn't have to go back to Congress every few years and say, increase the tax code, right, at the tax bracket. So that happens automatically every single year, which is really beneficial. Another thing that they did was they added the standard deduction. So the standard deduction, it used to be that, you know, people would itemize, you know, create an itemized list of all the things that they spent that was, you know, could be excluded from your tax return or deducted from your tax return. And you would create that list and you would have to itemize it and that to get it taken off of your taxes. Well, they created a standard deduction and said, well, you know, if you know, everyone can automatically get this amount taken off of their taxes every year. Not only that, but it's going to be adjusted for inflation every single year, which is really a boon for most people, because most people couldn't itemize a large amount. And so they didn't itemize at all. So they were paying more taxes than they should have. And not only that, but it essentially gave a tax break for the lowest tier of workers. But not only that, it applies to everyone, right? So regardless of how much money you make, you got to take that standard deduction. So, you know, those two things were really, really beneficial. There was another thing that was part of it, which had to do with gift taxing. It used to be that if you gifted more than an annual amount every year, you had to pay 50% tax on that gift. That got changed. Same thing with estates. You know, if your estate was over $1 million, you ended up paying like 39% in taxes.
Wow.
So that was something also. It got increased to about 12 million if you're married. You have the annual exclusion, and if you go beyond that annual exclusion, it just goes towards your lifetime exclusion amount, which is the same amount that you get, you know, as part of your estate taxes. So it eliminated estate taxes, at least on a federal level, for the vast majority of people. So overall, right, the new tax code was very beneficial for most people. It also included a whole lot of incentives and restructuring of corporate taxes to help stimulate small businesses. And, you know, so in a nutshell, that was the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. However, in order to get it past Congress, Congress would not agree to making it a permanent, you know, change to the tax code. They were afraid that what happens if, you know, it cuts the tax revenue too much and it doesn't have the added benefit of stimulating the economy. I think in hindsight, we can definitely say, at least based on the stock market, it really stimulated the economy. So that part works. But in terms of tax revenue, right, there, you know, the jury's still out of whether it actually brought in more tax revenue. So they, in order to get the law passed, what they did was they said it's going to sunset, it's going to expire in 2026. And when it expires in 2026, Congress will have the choice of whether they want to renew it and make it permanent, or if they want to change it.
Can you read the tea leaves in terms of that act that's going to expire? What are the experts saying? Do you believe it's going to expire in 2026, or do you think they'll just continue making changes like you talked about, adjusting for inflation as they've had for the last several years?
It's really hard to read the tea leaves on this. There's a few conflicting needs. Need number one is the fact is that we have to raise taxes. We have to increase the amount of revenue that we're getting from taxes. There's a number of ways to do that, right? And it doesn't require a wholesale change to the tax code. But that is kind of the situation that we're facing, that we need to increase taxes. If Congress, the fear is that Congress will not get their act together and the Tax Code and Jobs Act will just expire. And if it just expires, we automatically revert to the old tax code, which obviously doesn't work for anybody, right? Everyone's going to end up paying an enormous amount of taxes, which will give Congress what they want, but it'll, you know, basically plunge our economy into a depression, because none of the workers are going to be able to afford anything. And, you know, hey, everything that comes from that. So I don't think, realistically speaking, that's what's going to happen, but it could happen, right? That's the fear. It could happen.
Right.
I think more realistically is that there's going to be changes made to it, or changes made to the old tax code. So like if they let it expire, they may go back to the old tax code, but adjust it for inflation. Or they may just extend the current tax code and tax cut and jobs act. They may extend that by a little bit. And make tweaks to it, like removing portions of it or increasing taxes on certain people. And that's what we really got to pay attention to is, you know, are they saying, well, let's increase the maximum tax bracket, or let's, you know, decrease some of the higher tax brackets, you know, so the 22 and 24% tax brackets hit people at lower incomes, right? They may say that. They may say that, you know, some of the exclusions that are made for small businesses, that those are going to go away, which will effectively, you know, increase taxes on a lot of people, considering that 85% of people are employed by small businesses. So we don't really know. I'm not a doomsayer saying that it's going to expire and you got to, like, you know, do crazy things. We do need to stress test it and see if it makes sense for you to do things like Roth conversions or accelerate tax events now when the tax code is lower, right? If it potentially increases. But let's see what the impact will be on your retirement if it increases, because, you know, for some people it'll increase their taxes. For other people, they'll actually save money by going to the old tax code. So you really never know until you stress test that.
Interesting. I know one size doesn't fit all, and we're talking about the 2026 Tax Cut and Jobs Act set to expire. So how are you advising the people that you talk to? I know, as I just mentioned, that one size doesn't fit all, but what about those folks who are over 50? Are there some specific things they need to consider in anticipation of the possible tax change?
Yeah. So if you're over 50, and I should say, yeah, over 50 or no longer employed, right? And I think that's a key distinction as well, because you could be under 50, but if you separated from your employer, you have the same opportunity. One of the biggest things that you should consider is doing Roth conversions. And the reason is that if taxes go up, whether they go up next, you know, in 2 years or they go up in 10 years, right? If they go up, it could potentially save you money by doing a Roth conversion and paying taxes now, right? So that is something that you definitely want to take a look at. You want to take a look at other items in the tax code that you can leverage to your advantage that may go away. For instance, the gifting, right? If you want to give to your beneficiaries and you want to, you know, that's part of your plan, you want to give to your kids and your grandkids or charities or whatever, the current tax code is very favorable for doing those transfers. That's something that can go away at any point, right? Now, how much of it is going to go away? Who knows? But it is something that I would definitely take a hard and close look at and see, is this something that I should seriously consider doing? What's the potential savings that I have based on, you know, different scenarios? And depending on what they look at, you may want to take a bet or a partial bet, because we know taxes or tax revenue have to go up. So, and we know that the tax code is going to change somehow, because, I mean, you know, Congress, depending on who's in power, is really going to decide whether it's going to just get extended or it's going to get completely overhauled, right? And we won't know that until, you know, this election cycle is completed. And so that's something that we're really keeping our eye on is, you know, who does it look like who's going to be in power? And come November time, you know, right after the election, we're going to, you know, we may be making massive Roth conversion moves or other tax moves for our clients based on who's going to be in office the coming year, because you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, this administration has already said once of doing a retroactive tax hike, which, you know, put the world, you know, put everyone up in arms. But there's nothing that says that Congress can't do it.
Wow. Well, Label, that's all the time we have for today. But I invite you to join us next week as we dive into ways to reduce last year's tax bill. Yes, you heard that right. It's not too late to reduce last year's tax bill. And we'll be talking about it more in next week's episode. I'm Freddie Bell, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead. And today is National Clean Off Your Desk Day. It's an opportunity to begin the new year with a clean and organized workspace. Whether your desk is in a private or shared office, cubicle, home, or makeshift desk on the counter, having your workspace uncluttered and organized will help you to work more efficiently. A clean workspace improves productivity and inspires you too. It often gives us a sense of serenity, and I've got some tips for getting organized. First, remove everything from your desk. Yes, everything. Clean the surface, and as you replace items, clean them with the appropriate cleaning supplies. Get out the shredder and the garbage can. Shred, file, scan documents, business cards and recipes, photos as needed. Place all the documents and photos in the appropriate locations. Shred and toss outdated documents, non-working pens, and junk mail. And don't forget to replace the old calendar hanging on the wall. While you're at it, vacuum up those dust bunnies and sanitize your keyboard. Place a fresh box of tissues on your newly cleaned desktop, and you'll be ready for new clients in no time. Use the hashtag CleanOffYourDeskDay to post on social media. I'm Freddie Bell, and we'll be right back.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, Minnesota Family Investment Program, MFIP, and WIC Nutrition, along with other available programs, can help you buy food while budgets are tight. SNAP, MFIP, and WIC benefits can help families access additional support as well, including health screenings, emergency assistance, nutrition education, and employment training. Apply online at applymn.dhs.mn.gov. This message is powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Paul, that great teacher that shaped so much of what we call Christianity, was addressing the early Christian community that was forming in Philippi, in what we now call Macedonia. And he wrote, at the end of his letter, after he had talked on like somebody I know, he said, to sum it all up, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these qualities. Our earliest prayer, used in our Unity tradition, begins with this simple line. But what does it mean to you? The invocation begins, I am now. I am now in the presence of pure being. Some of you are mouthing the words along with me. Charles said every Unity student should begin their day, their meditation, their prayer time with those words. Why? It's bringing your attention around to this moment. I am now in the presence of pure being, embraced by God, if you will, however it's meaningful to you to word it. But to remind yourself, like that scripture, this is the day that God has made. This is the moment that God has given me. What am I going to do with it? Francine caught me. I've been given this gift. You've been given this gift. You have been given this hour, this moment. What are you going to do with it? When you know that, when you focus on that, you will know joy. You'll be filled with enthusiasm, another word for God flowing through us, Spirit moving and animating us here, now. Easy to say, challenging to practice. Really try with that little piece of paper just to see how many times you're catching yourself Monday, tomorrow, thinking about the week ahead or thinking about that service at Unity you had to sit through on Sunday and forgetting to claim the day that God has made for you in that moment. So let's take a moment. Let's move into the silence. Father, Mother, God, life-giving, life-sustaining power, I am now immersed in your presence. In this moment, in your embrace, my body is healed because I see it aligned with the truth you created, the gift that you gave me. That is a healing pulse. Spirit of the living God, in this moment, you are all wisdom, guiding the clarity of my thinking, the warmth of my feeling, and the firmness and strength of my willing to act. Father, Mother, God, I am a song you are singing into life. I am your beautiful melody, unlike any other. I will allow the world to hear me, to hear your song that is me. This moment is our life. It is our love. It is our wisdom. It is our power. It is our substance, because it is now. I recall a technique of our friend Marlene. If you're struggling with anything in this moment, are you okay now? How about now? Is everything okay now? We give thanks for the blessing of now. We give thanks for the blessing of presence between us. And let's close this reflection, if you want to join me, if you want to support me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Let's try it again. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Try that this week. Sing that. And if that doesn't bring you to this moment and make you aware of the omnipotent good of God, embracing you, rooting for you, guiding you, reassuring you, empowering you. Only the now will do it.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. This is New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and here are today's words to the wise. The future is now. Today's words to the wise, the future is now. I'm inviting you to consider that the present moment is the gateway to shaping and influencing what lies ahead. It encourages a proactive and forward-thinking mindset, emphasizing the importance of taking meaningful actions now to create a better future. Instead of waiting for tomorrow, I invite you to look for opportunities for progress, innovation, and positive change that are available to us right now. By being mindful, making strategic decisions, and actively engaging with the present, we can shape the course of our future and make the most of the opportunities that exist in the here and now. Today's words to the wise, the future is now. You can find more by visiting FreddieBell.com or by downloading the Freddie Bell Radio Show's app. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.